Good morning. We're going to continue today our series on personal status determinations and focus on personal status in the context of kahuna. We all know the classic corny joke about the guy who comes to the rabbi requesting to be made a kohen. Right. I don't have to repeat that. But a. I heard a newer joke this year that maybe not all of you have heard. I heard this from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson about a certain Yankel from the town of Pinsk who comes to America to find his fortune being a lo yitzlachnik back in Europe. He lands on the Lower East Side and he decides now that he's in America, he's really going to make it. He's going to become a kohen. So he comes to shul the first Shabbos. And Gabi says, they're kohen here. He raises his hand. He gets the first aliyah. He's all so proud of himself. And after davening, everyone goes to shake the rabbi's hand. And the rabbi looks at him for a second, slices him up and says, aren't you Yankel from Pinsk? I know you. I knew your father. I knew your grandfather. You're not a kohen. So Yankel, without missing a beat, turns to the rabbi and says, Rabbi, this is America. If you can be a rabbi, I can be a kohen. In these jokes, the protagonist always wants to become a kohen, prestigious position. But nowadays, what we find more prevalently is people who do not want to be a kohen, people who are presumed to be kohanim, but for whatever other reasons, they want to marry someone who's prohibited to a kohen. They want to become not a kohen. So how does that work? On what basis do we possibly believe someone previously presumed to be a kohen to not be a kohen? When can we make such a determination that a presumed kohen is not a kohen? So before we get into that, let's touch a little bit on those classes of women who are prohibited to marry a kohen, and where even in those situations there might be grounds for what we'll call post facto leniency. Take a look at the first source, Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer Simen Vav Pasuk Sif Aleph. You really could have just quoted the Pasuk in Parshas Amri, Shazana V'chalalolo Yikachu, but let's take a look how it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Kohen Asim in a Torah Begrusha, there's a biblical prohibition that a Kohen is not permitted to marry a divorcee. Zona, not permitted to marry a Zona. What's a Zona? Take a look at source 2. Simen Vav Sif Ches Ezu Zona. Kol she'ena bas Yisrael, someone who is not Jewish, which becomes clearer later in the Sif, it means a Gioras. So a convert is not permitted to marry a Kohen. O bas Yisrael she'nivel ala adam she'asur li nasilo. Or a Jewish girl who has relations with a man that she is not permitted to marry, such as a non-Jew. Oh, shenivel al chalal, or someone who has relations with a chalal, someone who used to be a kohen, who himself had relations with the woman who was prohibited to him, and had a product who is a chalal. Okay, back to Sif Aleph, source 1. So grusha zona chalala. Got a chalala is the product of a union between a kohen and a woman that a kohen is not permitted to marry. So these are all biblical. V'asher b'chalusa midirbanan. If a woman was the subject of chalisa, so that's a rabbinic prohibition for such a woman to marry a kohen. Skipping to the end of the first line, aval grusha, afilu eina el safik grusha. If someone is a divorcee, even if it's only a safik divorcee, sarach lahotzi benchin isgarsha min erisin ushin isgarsha min nesuin. That is a prohibited marriage. It's a marriage where there is to be such kedushin. The marriage is going to be chal. It's a valid marriage, but it's a prohibited marriage. And if a kohen marries such a grusha, he must divorce her. Vafilu reyach haget posel b'kahuna. This is true even by reyach haget. What's reyach haget? Someone had asked about this last time, which is why I wanted to touch on it for a couple of moments. Reyach haget, literally the smell of a get, is a situation where a get perhaps is not absolutely necessary, but a get nevertheless was given, and that creates what's called reyach haget, the smell of a get, and even in such a situation, a person who received a get under such circumstances is prohibited to marry a kohen. Now the question where this comes up most often is, let's say a woman receives a get following a civil marriage. We discussed last time the halachic status of civil marriage or non-halachic marriage. So, as we noted, the upshot is that on a lechachila level, we do require a get even for civil marriage, although if push comes to shove, we would allow someone to remarry without a get because the majority position is that a get is not absolutely necessary. The marriage is not absolutely halachic. So what happens if a woman is married in a civil or non-halachic ceremony and then receives a get as we recommend, is she now permitted to marry a kohen? Yeah?
Is the iser on her or is it only on him?
The iser is on him. The iser is on him. And her part would be minimally misayaya, aiding and abetting the violation of an iser. The iser is on him. Yeah.
Does it matter if they live as man and wife at all? What I'm asking about is like sometimes like kids, the Taurus had a little marriage ceremony and, you know,
right, so that was our discussion. That was our discussion last time. That any even civil marriage ceremony on a lechachila level would require a get, but b'di'evad, if push comes to shove, there's what's relying not to require a get. So this is a major issue that comes up in the context of kahuna permissibility to marry someone who had a get from a non-halachic marriage. Major machlokes among contemporary poskim whether this is considered to be a reyach haget. There's an unpublished tshuva of Rav Avadia Yosef from the early 1990s in which he rules permissibly. He was talking about a situation where there were found to be halachically invalid witnesses to the wedding ceremony. There's a letter from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik about a non-halachic marriage, similar situation where he allowed a woman to marry a kohen after receiving a get from that non-halachic marriage. And that's basically the position of our Beis Din, that under such circumstances we would allow a woman to marry a kohen. Rav Natar Greenblatt Shel Zeigesund told us that he had a conversation once with Rav Yashiv, and Rav Yashiv is of the opinion that in this situation there is a reyach haget, a woman cannot remarry, and that's also the position at least exposed by some dayanim in the Batei Din Rabbaniyim and one relatively recently published tshuva from a Beis Din in Tel Aviv. There is a fascinating question of Reb David Zvi Hoffman, Shuvas Malami Lahoel Chela Gimel Seif Simen Tes, Chela Gimel Simen Tes, Source 3 Lamar Makomos. When Rav Schechter quotes the Malami Lahoel, he often points out that the Shuvas and the Malami Lahoel were published posthumously, and as such you can always question whether the author wanted the tshuva to be published, which Rav Schechter quotes often in the context of a different interesting tshuva, but you could see why maybe such things wouldn't have been published had the author reviewed the manuscript ahead of time. So the fascinating question that he addresses is there's a lady who became pregnant with a kohen. There was no marriage. And then she ended up marrying another guy who was not a kohen. And the other guy who was not a kohen found out after the marriage that she had previously had a relationship with the first guy and divorced her, claiming that there was some kiddushei tos, some deception, some fraud involved in their getting married. So now this girl wants to go back and marry the first guy who was a kohen, who is prohibited to marry a divorcee. So part of the question was whether there are grounds to invalidate the second marriage on the basis of kiddushei tos, that it was done under false circumstances, which he's reluctant to do because at the very least you have a suffix, at least you have a serious doubt that the marriage was valid. One second. And all he's willing to suggest in the end, which he doesn't really endorse, but he says maybe the family's worried about the public perception of this daughter who's bearing a child without a father. So if it helps them, maybe you could have the kohen marry this girl in a civil ceremony, not live together, obviously, because they're prohibited to be married to each other, and then at a convenient time they can get a civil divorce as well. But then he says that's not such a good idea because that's going to be viewed suspiciously by the authorities as trying to hide behind some kind of civil instrument to solve a social religious problem and use that marriage as a cover. The baby is fine. The baby is a Cohen. The father is a Cohen. Assuming that there are no other previous issues affecting either status of father or mother. Yeah?
Why didn't they enable to turn to Beloys here the issue with the Asse and Soife and Beloys and have it as Pilus, Oyen, and Mapate?
Well, there wasn't any evidence of onus, and we don't. Okay. Let's move on to source number four. The other issue that that does come up a lot in this context is the status of a child of a Jewish mother and a non-Jewish father. We alluded to this in the past as well last week. The Gemara tells us kedushin daf ayin machlokas tanoim, but we paskin like the opinion that eved va'akum habab as Yisrael havlad kasher. If you have a eved or a non-Jew who has relations with a Jewish girl and has a child, the child is kasher. What does kasher mean? Major machlokas rishonim. Take a look at the riff here. The middle of the first line, the riff yivamas tesvavam beiz bedapay riff. The ika meirabu when they rabu asa. And some of the rabbis conclude regarding this statement, when we say the product is kosher, it means kosher to marry a regular Yisrael, but the child of a non-Jewish father may not marry a Kohen. If it's a daughter, that daughter may not marry a Kohen. Yes, a kal v'chomer from Almana, just like an Almana is prohibited to marry a Kohen Gadol, and that's a restricted prohibition only to a Kohen Gadol, but the relationship between a Jew and a non-Jew is prohibited across the board, so the status of the product of that union should be more severe. That's the position that the Rif quotes, that kosher means not a mamzer, but still prohibited to marry a Kohen. Yeah.
Is this based on the principle of Mala Osav Yichson?
No, this is possibly even a din d'oraisa, or it's an extension of zona. Even if it's a din d'rabbanan, it's an extension of zona. It's not just a mala al sibi yichsin, which is a lower level, clearly d'rabbanan concept. Okay, what does the Rambam hold about this? This is a source of debate, but take a look at source number five. Akum the Eved Haba Bas Yisrael Vlad Kosher. So Rama just quotes the Gemara. Vlad is Kosher. Bein Penuya, whether she was single. Bein Beishas Ish, whether she was married. Bein Beones, Bein Beratzon, whether it was willingly, unwillingly. Fine. So the Rambam just quotes the Gemara Havlad Kosher without any commentary. So some understand in the Rambam, well, the Rambam makes no mention of a prohibition the Kohen. So the Rambam holds that the product of such a union would be permitted to marry a Kohen. And others say, no, the Rambam is just quoting the Gemara's language, as is the norm for the Rambam. The Rambam often just quotes Lashon and Gemara. He quotes, that's his job, he just quotes what the Gemara says. And the fact that he doesn't comment doesn't mean he's taking a stand one way or another. How do we pass in the Shulchan Aruch? Source number 6, Evan Ezer Simon Dalitz, if you test. Ovde Kochavim ve'eved Shabo Olam Amzeres, Havlan Mamzer. If you have a non-Jew who cohabits with a Jewish woman, whether she is single or married, a vlad kasher, meaning not a mamzer, the child is not a mamzer, upagim l'kahuna. However, the child may not marry a kohen. Now, given that this is a lower level iser than that which is clearly articulated in the Pasuk, it may be an extension of a Zona, but it's not the real Zona. So there are grounds to permit such a union, at least be the Eved. Given, number one, the fact that it's subject to Machlokas Rishonim, and it's, let's say, a lower level Isser. So take a look at the Bishmuel super commentary on Evan Ezer here, Sifkatan Beis in Source 7. He says, HaRif Mesupak Beze Im Heim Pegumen Lakuna. The Rif, as we noted, quotes two opinions. But Rambam kasev dehem sheva. The Beit Shmuel understood in the Rambam that the child is permitted to marry a Kohen. The Rosh says begubel lekahuna. That's the position that the Rif quoted in his first position. Therefore, he says the third line ulapsak halacha nira lechora bidi eved ein motziim im niseis lekohen. So bidi eved, if they got married in an unsanctioned way, they should have gotten married. But if a Kohen marries the daughter of a non-Jewish father, he doesn't have to divorce her. The Hala Rambam Kasher, he thinks according to the Rambam it's Kasher anyway, and according to the Rif of the Ramban, you don't have to divorce. what is considered to be bidyavet. So here, specifically among the Sephardi poskim, the contemporary Sephardi poskim of the last generation, Rav Avadya Zichrono Livracha, Rav Amar, Lavdim Chaim Lachaim, the previous Sephardi Rav Rashi. So among the Sephardi poskim, we find more of an orientation to be makel on these things, to kind of stretch what's considered bidyavet. So clearly bidyavet means if they already got married. What if they didn't get married yet, but they're going out seriously? So among the Sephardi poskim, you see a certain elasticity of what's considered to be bidyavet, which we don't really have in our tradition of psak so much among the Ashkenazic poskim. Sorry?
Is it because it's Rambam Shita, the Sephardim are more, or just
Bichlal? I think it's partially Bichlal. We'll see in a little while a tshuva of Rav Avadya about a related issue that touches on this. But because there are a number of sfeikos that you can put into the mix, and as we'll see, some of the poskim will always rely as a sniff, as a another thing to add to the mix, the position of the Marashtam. The Marashtam is of the position that nowadays all the Kohanim are Safek Kohanim anyway, because we don't really know who's a Kohen Meyuchas. No one can prove their lineage back to Aaron a Kohen. So we don't know for sure who's a Kohen, and anytime there's a doubt, you can add other doubts to the mix. Yeah.
It was a practical matter. Yeah. Sephardim and Ashkenazim looked to break up the relationship. The Sephardim say that you have to bother breaking them up before they're married.
So again, there seems to be this orientation among some of the more contemporary Sephardi poskim to work with people if they're already somewhere. You know, nobody would rather shidduch, but if the relationship is already somewhere far along. There's even a case a number of years ago in America, the situation of a couple that was seriously going out, where they consulted Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, who also was willing to entertain the possibility that would be considered bidyavet. Rabbi Bleich has an article, I don't know if it's appeared yet in the reprinted contemporary Halachic Problem volumes. It was printed in Tradition probably about 10 years ago, in which he took strong issue with one of Rav Amar's tzakim, from the Beit Din HaGadol, the chief appeals court in Eretz Yisrael. Again, Rav Amar was espousing what we called the more liberal Sephardi position on these matters. Okay.
What's the status of the child of this relationship?
So that's also machlok. Is the child going to be a halal? Yeah, so that's an unresolved issue, which is not at all clear. So probably he might be a Safik Halal. Safik Halal is the worst of both worlds, because he can't marry someone that a Kohen is prohibited to marry, but he also doesn't get the privileges of being a Kohen. So if it's a Safik Halal, sometimes that's even worse. Okay, so let's move on now to the bigger question. What is the believability of a person to claim that he's a Kohen, and how could we potentially challenge such assertions? Source number 8. Evan Ezer Simon Gimel Seif Aleph. Evan Ezer Simon Gimel Seif Aleph. Machlokas the Mechaber and the Rambam. The Mechaber is based on a Rambam. Rambam Parakafi Suei Bia. Mechaber writes as follows. Misha Bab is Manazavi Amar. A person comes forward nowadays. We know nothing about him. Steps forward, gets off the boat, goes into Shul on Lower East Side for the first time. And he says, Kohen Ani. I'm a Kohen. Ein O Naman. We don't believe him. The Ein Malin Asol Kahuna Al Pi Atzmo. We don't give him the privileges of Kahuna based on his self-representation. The Lo Yikra B'Tor Rishon. We don't give him the first Aliyah. The Lo Yisas Kapov. We don't allow him to Duchen. Why not? So this is based on a Gemara in Ksubas Kafei Kavav. The concern that if a person is going to be seen as a Kohen, then you're going to give him truma to eat. And then we're talking about potential isurei deraisa, very severe repercussions for non-Kohen to eat truma. So because there's a concern of being malal yuchsin, if someone represents that he's a Kohen, so we're going to treat him as a Kohen across the board, even though to give him the first aliyah, big deal. So that's kind of a rabbinic convention to give a Kohen the first aliyah. Even to Duchen, not necessarily the biggest deal nowadays. But if you're going to give him Kohen, you're going to give him the first aliyah, so then we're playing with fire, so to speak. That's a major issur deraisa for non-Kohen to eat truma. So that's the concern of the Gemara in Ksubas, that we don't believe someone to represent that they're a Kohen, because we may then come to give them truma. The Ramah says, V'yesh Omrim, that was true back then. That was true when we had truma. V'yesh Omrim, that nowadays Naman likros b'Torah Rishon, a person is believed to get the first aliyah. V'lisas kapa b'smanazah and t'duchin. She'ein lanu truma d'araisa. Nowadays, we don't have truma d'araisa anymore. She'nachu shema yalu osa l'truma, that we have to be concerned that if we give the Kohen, if we give this guy the first aliyah, he's going to end up beating truma. Says Ramah, that is the common universal practice in all places where we don't eat truma nowadays. There's nothing to worry about. So this machlokes, one second, as everyone agrees, when we have truma, bisman shebeis hamikdash kayim, when we have truma deraisa, you don't believe someone to say that he's a kohen. But nowadays, do we still go with the original position, or do we say, since the repercussions are more minimal, the ramifications are more minimal, we believe someone to self-represent as a kohen? Yeah.
What about
Pidyon HaBen? So, if we believe him to be a kohen, so then we presumably believe him across the board.
Nothing changed about his believability, just the downside is
right
there. So why is
right
he more believable now because there's no downside?
So in principle, the only reason we don't believe him originally is because of the downside. Meaning in principle, a person, we'll see why, should have nemanus to say that he's a kohen. But we're not going to accord of that nemanus if there's a potential deraisa ramification.
So if Ruvain did a pidyon haben with this suspect Cohen.
Right.
Has Ruvain performed the mitzvah pidyon haben?
No.
According to the Ramah,
that's a downside.
Right. So you're saying, according to the Ramah, if the person just self-represents and we believe that self-representation to give him Cohen, maybe we should still be suspect to treat him as some kind of a suffix as far as pidyon haben.
But I don't have
maybe
to use him as a
Kohen.
I can use any other
Kohen.
Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva
in which he discusses a situation of a Kohen who had taken many Pidyon HaBen jobs and then discovered that he wasn't a Kohen. Does he have to return the money? So he has printed in Minchas Asher, I think Chelik Aleph, either Chelik Aleph or Chelik Beis. It was originally printed in a different volume of his material. I think it might have been in Minchas Asher La Torah. But he has various considerations why he could be making on that also. Yeah, Mr. Nachbar.
Many people came over from Europe.
Right.
How do they prove the Kohen?
Good, okay, so that's what we're going to talk about a little bit, but that's essentially what the Ramah is saying, that that since the stakes are low, we believe someone if they say they're a Kohen, we're not concerned about the potential ramifications. Okay, however, the Mechaber goes on to say, even if we take the Mechaber's position that a person is not believed to say that he's a Kohen, but if he comes forward and says, I'm a Kohen, Oser Asma Begrusha, he's still not allowed to marry a Grusha. Why? So, not exactly Pesha Asar. Well, similar idea. Why? Good. Shavi Nafshei Chaticha Disur. That's at least how the Magen Mishnah explains. The most intuitive explanation is the notion of Shavi Nafshei Chaticha Disur. What does that mean? That a person, as far as he's concerned, can accept upon himself something as being Asur. Literally, Shavi Nafshei, I treat it on myself, Chaticha Disur, like a piece of Isur, a piece of Isur meat. So a person may not have that modest effect others. A person may not be believed to say that you can't do something, but if I think I'm a Kohen, so I'm not going to believe you to give an aliyah because that affects the whole Sibor. But if you think you're a Kohen, so then go with it, put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, and you're usher to marry a grusha, you're usher to marry someone who is prohibited to a Kohen.
What's the status of the Kohen DNA?
You have to ask the biology professor.
The members are not strong enough to be machriya.
Yeah, our general, if you're to ask me about the new issue that I was thinking of talking about, but time doesn't allow, one of the previous shirim was the acceptability of mitochondrial DNA as evidence for Jewishness, which is a major issue going on now, just in the last year or two. But Cohen DNA, we haven't really been impressed enough with the statistics to create any halakhically valid evidence.
Just quickly, if someone is married to a person,
right,
and then represents to the Beis Din that he's a Cohen, we would throw it out because of another Mason.
If a person already got married and the Masada Kedushim thought that he wasn't a Kohen, and now he comes forward and says, no, I am a Kohen, so you do say Shavi and Ashli Chaticha Disura, so then he creates a problem for himself. Correct. And that's what... And because of Shavi and Ashli, that's source number 9, Beishmuel Sivkat and Zayin, Kohen Shinosa Grusha, the Omer De'ena Kohen, the Kohen marries a Grusha, he didn't tell anyone anything, and now he says... And now he says he's not a Kohen, but he was presumed to have been a Kohen beforehand. Say, so, you can't just wake up one day and say, oh, I made a mistake, I'm not a Kohen. He was already Shavi and Ashe. He already considered himself to be a Kohen. He's not allowed to marry a Grusha. So,
just going back to before when you said for duchening purposes,
So the act of duchening itself, there is a law for a czar to be no se kapa. There's a funny Gemara in Shabbos that seems to indicate that one of the Amorah maybe would have duchened if not for something Gemara Megillah. But whether that's allowed nowadays is, may not be allowed there, Isa, but it's definitely of less severe consequences than eating truma. Okay.
So, kofir legarish today, how do you do that?
That's a different shear. Okay. So, under what circumstances do we have the right to reevaluate someone who is presumed to be a Kohen and question whether he was indeed a Kohen or not? So, in general, there's a notion that if someone, and this is reflected here as well, if someone is muchzak, if someone is presumed to have any status, muchzak is a Kohen in this situation, so then that chazaka is immutable, unless under certain circumstances there may be grounds for what's called an amasla. An amasla is an explanation that a person can give that the original chazaka or the original presumption was based on false information. So let's say one of the classic amasas that we have is a woman says to her husband, Tmei ani lach, that I am Tmei to you. And then she says, no, I was mistaken, Tahora. So normally speaking, a woman says, Tmei ani lach, she's not believed to now turn around and say Tahora. But if she can provide an amasa, well, the reason I said Tmei was XYZ, and that's a plausible explanation, so then she's believed to provide that amasa to reconsider the original status. If you have a chazakah, if you have someone who acts in a certain way, so then it's much harder to override that chazakah even with an amasa. So there's a tshuva in the Ma'arit. Ma'arit was one of the early Rishonim. The Ma'arit Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Mem Tes. He was asked about a person who was presumed to be a Kohen who wanted to marry a Grusha, and now he claims that representation of being a Kohen is based on false information. Even though he had acted as a Kohen till now, his father acted as a Kohen till now, he said it was based on some mistake from the grandmother, and the Ma'arit for many reasons says he has no believability. He's already Huchzak, there isn't a sufficient Amasa. Once you have a Chazaka, once you're already presumed you're acting in a certain way, so the threshold of the Amasa that's required to overturn that is very high. He says, presumably, if the guy's been acting as a Kohen for a few generations, so originally there must have been Eidus, there must have been testimony, there must have been some objective evidence that pointed him to be a Kohen. Ramosha dealt with the following situation in source number 10. Relatively late Shuva, 1978, written to Rabbi Lazarovsky from Philadelphia, originally printed in Rabbi Lazarovsky's Sefer, and then reprinted in one of the later volumes of Igros Moshe. Moshe was asked about a Baal Tshuva, who had previously married a non-Jewish woman, and now they're becoming more observant, and he wants her to be Megayer so that they can get married halachically. Problem is that he presumed himself to be a Kohen. So what is the status of his kahuna? In this situation, the way Rav Moshe describes the story, his grandfather came from the Soviet Union in 1923. His father, this Baal Shua's father, did not observe anything. The grandfather, as long as anyone remembers, did not observe anything. And there isn't really any evidence to prove kahuna, aside from some vague knowledge in the family that they are Kohanim. So Moshe says, in this case, the fellow has no ne'amanus to say that he's a Kohen. Especially, he never heard it from his grandfather. Maybe the grandfather, before the communists came, learned in Cheder in Russia, and maybe he had some understanding of what kahuna meant, but this grandson never heard anything from his grandfather. So given that the rove of the world are not Kohanim, you don't have to be concerned that maybe this guy is a Kohen. He has no believability to claim kahuna. And therefore, Moshe says that this woman could be Megayer halachically, and then they could get married. Rav Moshe has a similar tshuva, Chelek Dalet Simen Yud Aleph, Chelek Dalet Simen Yud Aleph, where the only knowledge of kahuna, again, a Baal Tshuva, totally not observant, the father was not observant, the father said that when he was bar mitzvah, they told him he was a Kohen, and he got the Kohen Aliyah. But going back as far as the family knew, there was no evidence of any observance of kahuna, and there was a first cousin from the father's side, who clearly wasn't a Kohen. So absent any strong evidence or any evidence of kahuna, the fact that he had some vague notion that he's a Kohen isn't sufficient. Rav David Cohn has a much more sweeping understanding of Rav Moshe's position on these kahuna matters than what you necessarily would gather from the tshuvas. In the printed tshuvas, these two tshuvas that we just mentioned, there's other considerations or reasons that you don't necessarily believe the person that he's a Kohen. But Rav David Cohn's understanding of Moshe is more sweeping, that any time a person comes from a non-religious background, the father, grandfather weren't observant, even if they claim kahuna, and even if they have some kind of evidence to indicate kahuna, but they never really observed anything as Kohanim themselves, they have no ne'amanus, and the person is not considered a Kohen at all, even misafik. Yeah.
Is this perhaps, we talked about the issue of Rav Moshe last week.
Yeah.
Essentially invalidating reform and conservative marriages, which, of course, on the other side, they screamed and yelled, but actually was a kula
right.
to minimize the Moseris issue down the line. Is Rabbi Cohen's argument here sort of the same way?
I think it's a different consideration. There the question is there a halakhically valid marriage ceremony? So that's a very narrow question. Here the question is believability in the broad picture. If what is the evidence to speak of that someone's a Kohen? And if it's just hearsay from a family that never really observed anything, do we give any stake or any validity to that hearsay? It's a different issue. Yeah.
Say hypothetically, right. Eventually go back and you find him at Seva that indicates that it was a forefather.
Yeah. So good. Okay, good. So let me.
An intervening soul, can you say that as well? Or
and would you have put up a Matseva at 6.7?
Yeah, good. Okay, so I was going to get to that soon, but since you brought it up, I'll mention that now. What is the status? I alluded to this in the first year about the case of the forged Matseva in Eretz Yisrael that the Rabbanut caught. But what is the status of Matseva in terms of providing objective evidence? So I think this is a machlokas between the Rav and Rav Osner. The Rav, in his famous 1975 address to the rabbinic alumni, which if you never heard, you can listen to, I think it's posted on the BCBM website. This is the famous drasha about Tavla Mesav and ontological umdanos and Geiris. So the Rav there told the story that someone had come to him in Boston, a Baal Tshuva who was going out with the Giyores, very fine people, and the Baal Tshuva went to cemetery to see Kivrei Avos, and he was a little bit surprised to see this picture of 10 fingers. He didn't know what it was, and he asked around a little bit, and they told him it meant that you're a Kohen. So the Rav told this Baal Tshuva, you have to break up with this Giyores that you're going out with, because you're a Kohen. And a Kohen is Aser L'Giyores. That's what one of the reprints of this drasha is entitled Surrender to the Almighty. That was the Rav's line, that sometimes, as hard as it is, the din's a din, and there's nothing to do about it. You have to surrender to the Almighty. This is a tzak from one of the Bati Din Rabbi Yemen Eretz Yisrael a few years ago. Very sad story, but along these lines, there is a fellow, a Baal Tshuva, who had been married twice previously. He was married to a Grusha who had been married once previously and divorced. And he had no idea what kahuna was, and suddenly someone tells him that he's a Kohen. He didn't really understand what that meant or what the basis was, so they went to the Rabbanu. The Rabbanu investigated. They looked at evidence in the family. They opened up the Tikni Suins, the marriage files of the father, the grandfather, whatever they had, and they came to the determination that the guy is really a Kohen, no question. And he had to separate from his wife, who was a Grusha. That's what the Rav calls surrender to the Almighty. Rav Vosner, Tshuvas Shevet Alevi, Chelag Yud Simen Reish Cafe, Chelag Yud Simen Reish Cafe, Tshuva dated 2000, Ches Kislev Tavshin Samach Aleph. So he writes, if a person has no, it's not in the Bar Mikvah. If a person, if I gave you everything that cast on the paper, that's why give it the Bar Mikvah. You can look it up afterwards. Chelak Yisim and Reish Cafe. If they take that up with the Center for the Jewish Future. So Rav Vosner writes that if a person has no first-hand knowledge of Kahuna observance in his family. He didn't do anything, his father didn't do anything, and all they know is they see on an old matseva that they're a family of Kohanim. He says, Ein kan chazaka, the Ein kan edus. Doesn't prove anything. Because who knows, maybe they didn't know what they were doing, we have no objective evidence, and someone had some vague notion that they're Kohanim, and that's what they told the matseva maker. But the Rav very clearly held that I think that we generally go with that approach, that if there's a matseva under frum auspices, where presumably they knew what they were doing, that is a significant indication of kahuna. Vavadya Zetshuva, source number 11, Chelek Zayin Se'if Tes, Simen Tes, Chelek Zayin Simen Tes, Evan Ezer. A young lady comes to get married in Israel with a young man. They're both originally from Tehran. The woman claims that her father was a non-Jew. The boy may be a Kohen. Why? Because in Tehran they called him Kohen. But he claims that there are a lot of people that he called Kohen and they gave a Kohen aliyah to, but they weren't really Kohanim. And aside from that, it was like an honorific. And aside from that, no one really did anything to indicate kahuna. So the lower court, the Beit Din Ezori, paskind that they're allowed to get married because you could be mitzarif, the marshdam that we noted before, that everyone's a suffic kohen anyway. We don't really know who's a kohen. And maybe this is a bidyevit situation where they're already going out with each other. And Rav Avadya adds over here, it's a svek sveka. So maybe the guy's not a Kohen, because we don't have hard evidence that he's a Kohen. And even if he's a Kohen, maybe it's like the Rambam, that a Kohen's allowed to marry the daughter of a non-Jewish father. So that's Rav Avadya's psak in that case. We had a case a number of years ago in the Beis Din. Every year, usually we have 2, 3, 4 people who come out of the woodwork and want to be certified that they're not a Kohen. You have to be suspicious when the motivation is to marry someone that they're not allowed to marry. But you look at it based on the evidence. sometimes, I just had recently, the first time someone asked to be certified as a challel. But we don't usually issue challel certificates. But someone wanted to be certified as a challel because he's going out with the grusha, and his father's definitely a kohen. No question about that. But his father is married to a grusha, and not a grusha from a civil marriage or a reform marriage, but we're able to prove that the original marriage of the mother was an Orthodox wedding. She had an Orthodox get, and then she had a non-Orthodox wedding because she was a grusha with this kohen. So the kid's a halal. So the kid's a halal. He's allowed to marry a grusha. All like everything resolves itself in the end, whatever that means. So,
is it good for the Jews?
So we had a case along the lines of Rav Moshe's tshuva a few years ago, of a Baal tshuva becoming more observant, who was married to a conservative convert. And he had a shame muvak le kohanim. I don't want to give away the identity, but either Kohn or Katz, I guess. That doesn't tell you too much. So he had a last name that was a kohuna last name, and he had some vague notion that maybe they're kohanim. But we looked into it, and the family went back in America four generations. The great-grandfather came from Europe. They were not Orthodox affiliated going back four generations. We looked, they were able to get the tombstones going back to the grandparents, no evidence of kahuna, no real affiliation, and basically the only reason to think that he was a Kohen is because of the Kohen last name. There's really Chubas Mabit, you know, David Kohen, who we mentioned earlier, is also not a Kohen. So that's, there's a Chubas Mabit, the Mabit, we quoted before the Marit, Marit's father was a Mabit. So the Mabit has a tshuva, in which he writes that the fact that you have a Shem Uvak LeKohanim, a Kohen last name, doesn't prove anything. Because not everyone who has a Kohen last name is a Kohen. So in that case, we felt comfortable there. It actually felt like the right thing to do, aside from the fact that objectively that seemed to be the evidence that this is a very sincere couple coming back together to observance. And there really wasn't any evidence of Kohen. A more complicated question we dealt with more recently, along the lines of the Marit. Let's say someone is Muchzak as a Kohen, but the original knowledge of Kahuna is based on questionable evidence. So the case we were dealing with was someone going out with a Gioris, or prospective Gioris, who had left the Derech, but had previously been observant, but had been Chozer B'Tshuva with his father. So when they started being Chozer B'Tshuva, they were masking themselves as Kohanim, and they were duchen and getting the Kohen Aliyah for a number of years. But when push came to shove, why do they believe them to be Kohanim? So the only thing they came up with was that the grandfather, when he got married, his mother or someone said, "You're a Kohen." But aside from that, there was no evidence of Kahuna anywhere. Sometimes, if someone says they're a Kohen, it really means the mother is a Kohen, not the father is a Kohen. So in this case, there was no evidence of kuna, but the guy was duchening for a number of years. So that creates a stronger chazakah. But what happens if the chazakah is based on potentially a taos? That was a complicated situation. In the end, Rosh Hefter felt that you could be makel in the specific circumstance that we had over there. Just to close with one other fascinating tshuva that was published in the Pisgei Din Rabbanayim in the last year. I think this is in Be'er Sheva. So they write that they never saw anything like this before and they probably never see it again. What was the story? A guy who is presumed to be a Kohen comes. He wants to marry a Grusha. In the end, they broke up anyway for unrelated issues, so then it was kind of a Lishma question where there wasn't a Grusha in the mix. So the guy was from, his father was from, his grandfather was from, they all conduct themselves as Kohen. So what's the Shaila? The Shaila was that they did some genealogical research and discovered that the great-grandfather had a brother, and they were separated in Europe before the war. So this fellow's branch of the family went to, it sounded like France, they didn't give the country's name, but somewhere in Western Europe that had a Sephardi population, my guess is it was France. They went to France, and the other branch the brother or the great-grandfather stayed in Eastern Europe. And then both of them ended up coming to Eretz Yisrael at some point, and they had no knowledge of each other until recently. The other branch, the Eastern European branch, were not Kohanim. They didn't conduct themselves as Kohanim at all for generations. So you had one branch of the family from the same brothers, one branch of the family that was conducting themselves as Kohanim for at least four generations, one branch of the family that was conducting themselves not as Kohanim. So who's right? There were three Dayanim on the case. The three Dayanim had three different opinions. Usually when you have a psak and a bezin, so you have 2-1. It's either chayv or pater. But it's rare to have three. What are the three positions? So one position is that they are Kohanim. One position is they're not Kohanim. One position is they're Safek Kohanim. Because who do you believe? Who has a stronger chazakah? Is a more likely scenario that the family that conduct themselves as Kohanim are really Kohanim? And the other branch, maybe there's a chalal somewhere in the mix back in Europe, and that's why they stopped conducting themselves as Kohanim. Do you say that no, the family that didn't conduct themselves as Kohanim were the real ones? And the ones who went to Western Europe, so they went to new countries, so they faked being Kohanim for some reason. Or they didn't know what they were doing. Or you really don't know, it's a suffix, you have to treat them as a lechubra in both directions, not allowed to duchen, not allowed to marry a grusha. Our time is up, but hopefully this is some food for thought.